The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I already love you, baby.
I'm a dessert villain.
I have not done that because I'm not evil.
I have never thought my parents were going to, like, actually murder me before.
I was teaching so that I didn't have to pay tuition.
How do you feel about just being completely humiliated all the time?
It saved the planet, break into a stack machine with a hammer.
And Chesco and Vikram never got jobs in academia ever again.
You want more advice? Dole it out gladly. You want bad advice? Man, I'll give it out gladly. I got some good advice for you.
No, you don't.
What's up, everybody? This is Chesco, the speech prof, and this is Bad Advice Wednesdays, the show where we give bad advice in an attempt to not ruin your life. I guess technically we are attempting to ruin their life. We're intentionally giving bad advice, but they shouldn't listen to us. That's kind of...
No.
I'm telling you now, right? We're going for that. Don't, except for the parts where we do tell good advice. And there's no labels for either of those. So it'll be very clear. I guess there is a label. What am I talking about? Vikram today is my guest.
That is so on brand for how this is going to go, Chesco. I think having the two of us on a mic at the same time. Yeah, no, I buckle up,
it's
folks.
Beautiful. It's what everyone wants. Two men with microphones talking on a podcast.
The internet has been asking for it.
There's not enough.
No.
There's not enough so far.
No.
Well, you know, I know who you are. You know, obviously, as I started connecting with different professors online, and you had such a positive, happy presence on the internet that I was really excited to get to know you a little bit better. And this is only our second time, I guess, talking, quote unquote, face to face now. But I'd love for you to kind of tell my followers and the people watching this podcast, if they were to stumble onto the Plant Prof online, what would they expect?
Yeah, so I am the Plant Prof in, I think, all the places, the places that matter, whatever that means. It's mostly just like, I go for like nerdy positivity and as much sarcasm as I can fit into it, like a 60-second video. Like that's generally my whole thing. So you might see me ranting and yelling about a 5-minute crafts video where they're like, you know, covering a cucumber in Vaseline and sticking in the plastic bottle. I don't know why they do that. That's not good, like, plant growing technique. Or talking about academia or my family or telling really bad dad jokes. You know, so it's funny because in preparation for this, I was looking through my content because I think a lot of the people you talk to have, like, a really consistent and smart content strategy. But my friend once told me that watching my TikToks was like being on FaceTime with me. It's like a friendship simulator. And I think it's just whatever pops into my head, like I want everyone to know about. And so I just say words at a camera and then usually in one take, which my wife might argue with, I'll hit post and you get what you get.
Yeah. Now, I feel like a lot of us that that I end up connecting with have very similar styles in that regard, where it's just there's no real thought process behind it. It's kind of just I thought of an idea for a video. I'm going to post that.
Mm-hmm. Fun chaos. But, you know, I do try to get some good like plant actual information out there. I have a PhD in horticulture. I'm a horticulture professor here at my university, and so I try to actually give some good information sometimes, but usually I'm just like rambling and ranting about stuff. And the number of people who send me just absurd plant hacks that are, you know, probably 80% fetish content anyway. Like my inbox is just full of them constantly. So mm-hmm. you can in real time go back through my my, you know, TikTok history and my you know, history on all other socials and watch me slowly unravel. Just mm-hmm. totally come unglued over time. It's fun. It's fun for me. It'll be a good bunch of material that I can tell to my therapist someday.
You know, a lot of what you just mentioned is basically describes my lecture style in front of a classroom, where, you know, there's good information. Okay, there's it's there,
is it?
Right?
Is it?
Occasionally, I try to get back to my area of expertise, but for a lot of it is stories and rambling and me forgetting that I'm actually teaching a college classroom.
You're so when a student raises his hand, like, why'd you tell us that? Oh, I don't know.
Oh, well, no. Communication is everywhere, right? That's the beauty of being a communication studies program. It's going to be a little bit harder for you, you know, having actual expertise that's a little bit honed in on something. But communication can be literally anything.
See, that's like the dream, right? Just say whatever and be like, now what I was demonstrating wasn't just...
That is, I'm not joking. That is literally, I think, I didn't know I was ADHD in college, but the draw of communication studies was that I was able to, you know, I wrote my master's thesis on World of Warcraft. Undergrad, I studied a lot of gender and communication and feminist rhetoric. I wrote things about political movements. I wrote things about just whatever I was interested in that moment. It's kind of like my TikTok, but I just tied it narrowly back to comm studies and it worked out well.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
The dream.
So how did you you mentioned you're a professor as well, like how did you decide on kind of that path for you?
Well, I was gonna go to med school when I started college 1,000 years ago, and actually started off in biomedical engineering, so I was out of my mind, and I think at some point myself and the College of Engineering both came to the same realization that I was not cut out for that. Figured out, I interned, so my granddad was a doctor. I grew up with, you know, my mom and I lived with my grandparents growing up. And so my whole life, I was like, oh, I'm going to be a doctor. Like, I'm going to be like my granddad was. And it turns out I don't like blood and I'm bad at calculus. And so like neither of those things was going to work. And so like when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I had a really great, actually just general studies advisor in my undergrad that was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, you know, there's money in this and this. And he was like, no, I didn't ask you that. I asked you what you like, what do you want to do? And the other thing that my granddad and I always did growing up was garden. Like, we had a garden as early as I can remember. And so I was like, oh no, I like plants. And so, you know, I got into horticulture. I did my bachelor's in landscape design, and then I have a master's in fruit crop, tree crop production, water conservation. And then my PhD is in, urban landscapes, urban green space, and resource conservation. And so it just kind of happened, and I just got into school, and I think I didn't know how to get out. And 15 years later, I'm on the other side of the lectern, and it's fun. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love getting to teach mostly freshmen, lots of non-majors. It's a general science class, so I'll teach, you know, 150 students a semester, and 90% of them will be non-majors, and about 70% of them are freshmen. And so I get to be the first experience that I think a lot of students have of like the college experience and of taking a class. And I take that pretty seriously. I mean, I'm goofy and all of that, but I take the responsibility of that pretty seriously.
That's awesome. Well, when you started going down that path, when you realized that, you know, the plant world was where you wanted to really spend, you know, a decade of your life digging into. Did you want to be a? Did you know like being a professor was the end goal, or was that just something that kind of got? Did you end up there in some way?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think that I wanted to teach starting out. I actually had planned on going into industry, because as you and I know, we don't get into this for the money, right? Into the academia world.
You made. I don't know what you're
talking
about.
I'm in the wrong part of academia then, because they pay me in like old lettuce and 37 cents a month. Like, that's about my paycheck.
You can barter with that though. It's great.
I can. That's true. And you know, If you were going to be, you know, stranded on a desert island or in the apocalypse with someone, like, I can grow food. I can do the thing. But no, I think I wanted to be in industry. I actually ran a little landscape company for a couple of years. And then when I was doing my master's degree, I was, you know, TAing, so they would pay me and I didn't starve to death and all of that. And I actually found that I liked it. And so getting into a PhD, I think I still, at the beginning, like, wanted to go into industry, but like, I love being in the classroom. And I love getting to work with students. And it's always, it's funny because I teach the same thing, you know, every semester pretty much. But it's different every time because the dynamics of a classroom change and the students change based on like what's going on in the world. And it always presents new opportunities and new challenges and new ways to, I think, have a big impact. And so like, I think the first time I got in front of a class, like in a formal classroom setting, even though it was a lab, I was kind of hooked. And I think from that point, even in the back of my head, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this someday. Like, this is going to be my thing someday.
Yeah, you mentioned the amount of money that the teachers make, too. And I don't think people realize, especially when you're starting out, just how badly you are paid, both as a grad student and as an adjunct professor. Just the amount of work you are expected, the amount of responsibility you have, yet you are paid, at least I know I was, less than minimum wage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And like, I feel for our grad students, you know, we pay them, you know, our TAs and stuff as much as we can, but then at some point, like, our hands are kind of tied at past a certain point, but we do as much as we can for them, but no, it's rough, and they work a lot, and they work hard, and if we're being honest, it's the grad students that are carrying our universities. They're carrying the teaching load, the research load, and that's a big deal. Like, grad student pay and fair pay for grad students, and like you said, adjuncts and starting professors is a big thing, and that's probably more serious than you want to dive into in this podcast. But
it is an interesting thing, because I think people do ask. I get asked all the time, should I, and if I want to be a professor, is that a good career path? And that's such a complicated thing, because it's the carrot on the stick, right?
Yeah.
If you can get that tenured professorship, it is a great job.
Yeah, you're golden.
But I don't think people realize the difficulty to getting to that point, and the luck, to be honest, that is there of finding the right committee that just happens to like you, you happen to have the right research interest for the right job at the right place at the right time, and in a place you want to be, at a place in your life that you want to be there. And there's all of these things that go into that.
That is 100% the truth. And it's not lost on me how fortunate I am, because like, I've got a pretty sweet gig, if we're being very honest. Like, I was working full time through my PhD in another job. And about halfway through, this job of managing the greenhouse and gardens on campus opened up. And I was like, you know, I'm already like spending a lot of time on campus doing like research and school stuff. And so I applied for this and ended up getting it. So I probably had like two years left on my PhD. So I was working full time for the university doing that. And then as I was graduating, like, there was a specific position that like we didn't have in our department that I wanted. And so I just was like, hey, I want this. And I was real annoying about it for about 2 years. And finally it worked out. So I'm non-tenure track. I'm an assistant professor of practice, which means I'm like 80% teaching and 20% service. Right. And you know, a big R1 university, like, the idea of spending every minute of every day writing grants and then weeping in between is exhausting. And so, like, I get to teach and I get to play with plants and hide here at the greenhouse and people leave me alone. And, like, it is not lost on me how fortunate I am to be in the position that I am.
And it's so important to have good, especially the R1, and I don't mean to, like, you've heard me trash R1s to an extent on my channel before. But, like, you need good teachers at these big universities as well, because especially for the freshmen and the sophomores, right? Once you get to your junior, senior level and you're going to more in your research base and you know what you're doing, it's a little bit different, especially for the people coming straight out of high school. They go there, and not to judge grad students. I think I was a fairly good grad student teacher, but teaching was like number 15 on my list of priorities, right? I was not there to teach. I was teaching so that I didn't have to pay tuition, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Or does your university know that you're a content creator, and how do they feel about it if they do?
They do. They, yes, okay. So I made a TikTok one time that I posted on Facebook, I think, where the prompt was with Stitch. The prompt was like, tell me a rumor about an animal that's untrue. And I insinuated that a specific raccoon might be a mass murderer. And the dean of my college liked it. And I was like, oh, I need to be careful. So they know. In fact, you know, my podcast, Planthropology, where I interview plant scientists and nature people and climate scientists and literally anyone who will talk to me that I can shoehorn in a conversation about plants. My department and my college support it, and which is really cool. So they know I make content, and for the most part, they don't seem too unhappy about it. I'm fairly non-controversial in general.
Yeah.
One time some folks did get mad at me for talking about the weather. Say, I think I read the phrase government weather machine more times than I ever expected to in a single comment thread. But aside from that, you know.
Yeah, I do think, I imagine at least in Texas, you do have to be a bit more careful with that sort of stuff. I know when I taught in Arizona for a few, and it's one of those things where it's not that you're not allowed to have an opinion. It's just you have to be aware that there are going to be some people there that may not like you having an opinion.
For sure. 100%.
Yeah, you mentioned your Planthropology podcast. How did that come about? Like, was that something that your university was interested in starting, or was that completely like your baby?
That was actually completely my thing. I was having a conversation with a buddy up here at the greenhouse one day, and we were talking about some of the management practices that indigenous peoples in our area would use to manage the land and drive herds and all this like anthropological stuff that's tied to the land and to plants. And we were kind of joking, and we were like, oh, this would be a great podcast. You know, no one's going to. The thought at the time was like, no one's going to listen to that. Nobody cares. But then it stuck in the back of my head, and like 10 months later, I am neck deep in writing a dissertation, and I was about to lose my mind, and I was like, I need a creative outlet. And so I started the podcast, did a few episodes just kind of here in my office, and then went to my department chair after the fact. See, this was very much a ask for forgiveness kind of deal. And I was like, hey, I just started this project. It's just kind of, you know, on the side. And he was actually like my fifth guest on the podcast. And he was like, you know, I really like what you're doing. Is there other ways we can support it? And so since then, they have been like 100% behind it. The dean of our new dean of the college was on recently. And, you know, I'm trying to get the provost on the show. And so like the university has been very supportive, but no, it was very much something that I started, because I want to tell. My whole thing is I'm trying to tell stories of people that work with the land, that either research climate change or food production or water quality or really anything and everything in between, or students or industry folks. Like we have over the past 50, 100 years, whatever, lost a lot of our connection back to nature. And I just want to tell stories of the people that are still doing it and why they're doing it and why they care. Because it's hard to care about things that you don't know about. And I think telling these stories is important.
That's great. Now I definitely think we got a good idea of who we're working with here. and I want to introduce a new segment on today's podcast. Normally, we jump right into giving bad advice. But I try to listen to my followers. And people have been saying we want to actually hear some of the expertise, right? Some of the good advice. Some of the reasons they might follow you or myself is because they actually respect our opinions, oddly enough. And so I wanted to introduce a new segment where I look through social media and find some videos giving some advice on your area of expertise. And you can give us an idea of whether or not it's good advice, bad advice, or horrific advice, and okay, what maybe we should do instead.
Sounds good.
All right. So first off, I saw a video that said, if you have any problems with wet soil in your plants, you can use a tampon to dry it up.
That is bad advice. That's one of those things, and there's so much of this out there. It's like, you're technically not wrong. However,
okay.
The better thing to do is just to like wait a day or two and it'll drain out. Like the soil has been like getting wet and dry for literally hundreds of millions of years. And so like tampons
You're
are
telling
very...
me there are alternatives then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because a lot of these hacks that pop up, they're like, this is the right way to do it. I'm like, man, nature is sure lucky to have us, that we can figure out how to fix these problems after we've like destroyed half the planet.
And I'm sure the plastic waste that comes along with using tampons for plant use will probably be an extra additional positive
not great.
From there.
Yeah, not great.
This next one, I know you're going to appreciate, but I read that if you scoop out the middle of a banana and wrap it in a wet paper towel, you can grow your own banana tree in your backyard.
This is actually horrific advice. So one of my first really viral videos was about exactly this.
Okay.
The bananas you buy in the store are seedless bananas. And yes,
so what are those little, because like, they're like, obviously there's little things that look like seeds. What are the?
Right. Okay. So it's funny because there's a myth that those are tarantula eggs. This is also not true. Also not true. They are like the remnants of what would have been seeds. But they've been bred in such a way that they're sterile and we can just eat them. Like real banana seeds are like the size of marbles, you know, and like most of the banana is just full of like black seeds. So they're seedless, like in the same way that like a seedless grape is, or like a seedless watermelon. There's still technically little seeds in there. They don't do anything. So all the
so
videos
you're saying
you see,
I can't grow a banana tree in my
backyard. You can, just not that way.
Okay.
It's actually kind of interesting. Every banana that we've had probably since about 1960, every Cavendish banana, the big, everyone's favorite curved yellow fruit that we use for scale on everything, is pretty much genetically the same. They're all clones.
Well, I had a question about that. I read somewhere, and this is not from a video, but I remember reading years ago that everyone always says banana candy, and they're like, this doesn't taste like bananas. But I read somewhere that that's what bananas, it was closer to what bananas used to taste like. Is there any truth to that?
There is some truth to that, and this is a little bit debated, and you'll kind of hear it both ways. But the Gros Michel banana, which actually means Big Mike in French, I don't know.
Okay.
plant people like get bored, and they're just naming stuff all kinds of things. Like it's just pure chaos. But yeah, they probably tasted closer to what banana flavoring was like. I think it was a lot of like early flavor scientists just like throwing stuff to see what'll stick. And someone, it's a little bit like if you described a banana to someone, like the flavor of a banana, but didn't actually let them taste one. And you were like, I need you to make this. And they were on a time crunch. And so they were like, sure, close enough. Let's go with that. That's great.
You know, let's stick with bananas. I know one of your favorite things to talk about has been the banana water that you see people spraying on different plants. So the video says if I soak my banana peels in water for 48 hours and I use that water to fertilize my plants, that I can grow great, because tomatoes love potassium. The one I specifically saw was about tomatoes. Okay. The banana water is the way to go to fertilize my plants.
This is like... like, you know, Sisyphus rolling a rock up a hill. I think of it just like a big jar of banana water of me trying to roll it up the hill. So no, it doesn't really work that way. And it's funny because there are some specific folks that are like real loud about this on the internet. They're like, no, it's the miracle. It's not. Like, it's real effective if you like gnats. If you're trying to grow gnats, like if you love fruit flies and you were just like, you know, I don't have enough fruit flies in my life, then this works really great. Now, if you were to put the banana peels in some water and leave it for like 2 to 4 weeks and really let that stuff break down in there, there's like a super like technical term called fermented plant juice, which is a real thing. And they've actually done research on it. And if you leave it for long enough for it to start composting in that jar, yeah, then it's actually pretty good. It's pretty effective. But most of the videos you see where they're like taking a jar of hot water and dunking their banana peels in it, it's like the LaCroix of fertilizer, right? It's like this was transported near some fertilizer and we're just going to hope that it kind of works. It doesn't really do anything. If you've got time to wait and you can actually like really break that stuff down and ferment that compost tea essentially, then it does work. But my best advice for people wanting to do something with their table scraps is, like, just throw it in a compost pile. Just like, okay. You know, recycle it. Do something like that.
Worst part is that you will see it, because I've seen multiple videos of it, where they're clearly peeling the bananas and probably just throwing away the banana, the meat of the banana itself,
yep.
Just for the sake of doing this.
Yep, that's 100% it. There's just like a landfill somewhere full of just peeled banana mush,
right?
All from 5 Minute Crafts.
Oh man, I think several of these were from 5 Minute Crafts, by the way. So shout out to 5 Minute Crafts. I've heard this one actually from several places. Someone said if you use your unsalted pasta water, it can revive household plants because of the starch in it.
This one's not as bad as some of them. The starch can help. It doesn't, like, plants don't really take up carbohydrates that way. They mostly make their own through the leaves. They'll pull a little bit through the roots. But sometimes you can add some extra nutrients and things. I think if nothing else, you're at least just not being wasteful, right? Like using some of that water and watering your plants with it. And it's funny because I think people that like watch these hacks and they're like, oh, I need to do this. Like I make pasta all the time. I've got pasta water. Probably they're just watering their plants more consistently. Because I've seen some of these and like they'll pull up a plant that they clearly haven't watered in a month and then they'll like water it with pasta water. I'm like, yeah, it works because you're watering your plant. Yeah. It needs this thing.
You're saying water, so plants need water then is what you're saying.
Shocking. And it's funny because I have two degrees trying to prove this. That like both my master's and my PhD, like my thesis and dissertation were pretty much like, do plants like it if you stop watering it? Read the next 200 pages to find out. Spoilers, no, they don't. They hate that. They don't love that.
Our next segment is where these are questions submitted by my followers with no context, and they know that we're going to give them bad advice. I'm very explicit about it. I think some of them might be hoping for good advice.
They're not getting
but
it.
But I label it very clearly. It's, you know, I think we should start off nice and simple and start with question number one. My snack is stuck in the vending machine. What should I do?
Have you seen a hammer?
Ugh.
Like
I have.
I feel like the hammer was invented, you know, maybe to put nails in. Like that's the popular use. But like you know, the in case of emergency, like fire extinguishers that have the little hammer on them, like this feels like an emergency. Like you need your snack, and you got to get to that snack. However,
you
can.
If you don't eat, you die. If you don't eat, you die. So this is, you're saving your own life and maybe someone else's.
Yeah, there may be someone else who has a snack stuck there or is about to get their snack stuck. And really, the people who manage that machine should thank you. Because what's the other option? Like, you call the little number on there and they've got to go find a key.
They got to come open it
for you. Like,
who wants
you
to
need
do that?
Your Cheez-Its right now. Right now.
And what's a bigger waste of their time and money? Having to put a new pane of glass in or having to drive all the way out there on a day they weren't going to be there?
Listen, we have a carbon crisis, and we do not need people driving any more than necessary for frivolous things like getting into a snack machine when there are perfectly good hammers around.
Agreed. Save the planet. Break into a snack machine with a hammer. Question number two. How many Kit Kat bars is too many? How many Kit Kat bars is too many?
The very premise of this question doesn't make any sense to me. Like, one more than you have, take the number of Kit Kat bars you could like potentially legally purchase and add one to that, and that's too many. Like,
see, but I think that's good advice.
Yeah. Oh, we're supposed to be giving bad advice.
I think that's advice that we should all live by. Eat as many Kit Kat bars as you can, and then even if it makes you sick, then you just have more room for more Kit Kat
bars. More Kit Kat
bars. Why do I keep saying Kit Kat bars?
You're going to have to put together a blooper reel from this one day.
Yeah.
Just cut a whole bunch of them together. Look, you only really need one seat in your car, right? If you can fit your car and you can drive, then that rest of that space is available for Kit Kat bars.
What if you turn them into like a little person next to you so it looked like a Kit Kat man and then you could drive in the carpool in?
Yes. And if you get hungry, just start eating the parts that the cops can't see. Start like with his feet and his legs and it's fine. I think that's a... Again, we're giving good advice here.
We're giving too much good advice here.
And it seems to
be
like...
I guess the only bad advice would be not to eat Kit Kat bars.
Yeah, the worst advice I could give you was only eat one.
I'm meeting my boyfriend's parents for the first time. Any tips?
I like to think of it as like the first day in prison, which I've never been in prison, by the way. So I'm getting all of my information from television, which is the right place
it's to all
get,
accurate.
Like to build your worldview, right?
I'm fairly certain there's a law that anything put on television has to be accurate.
Yeah. Like I just pick a fight with the biggest person in the house.
Okay.
Right? Just like assert your dominance early. Or if like say your boyfriend's mom has cooked a meal, just like assert dominance with every bite and be like, oh, this is pretty good, but you know, I really make this better. Like
I have better.
Your pie is pretty good, but like you haven't lived until you've tasted my recipe for this exact same thing.
You're going, you're not even saying like my mom's is better. You're specifically putting it on to you as like you are better. Yeah.
No. Yeah. And you know, the your goal is to make sure that they know that you're trying to completely replace them in your boyfriend's life. That's the best way to like assert dominance.
Moms love that, because that really do. I think that's what moms are hoping for, is to to know that they won't be ever be needed anymore once this relationship takes off.
You're going to be taking care of their baby boy with like way better like chicken cacciatore than they could ever make. And I think this is the mistake people make in dating, is like they try to put their best foot forward on the very
horrible
first date
advice.
Meeting parents. Yeah, that's a terrible idea. Like, just lay out all your dark secrets. I think that is such a good idea.
You know, I think that's true for most life events too. For your job, start off bad. Almost get fired.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you're the boss and they're like, what happened? Because they noticed, they saw that growth. They see the potential in you.
That's perfect. So my wife and I have been married almost 13 years. Do you think it's too late for me to try this?
No, I think, knowing you, I'm certain you can do better.
Oh, absolutely. I think
let's go to one that we probably shouldn't answer as two college professors.
Oh, no.
How can I make my college professor fall in love with me?
Can we put a disclaimer on this one before we answer it? Don't.
Yeah.
But have you tried studying for an exam? Doing your homework.
Nothing hotter than that.
No. Like, when you come in and you're like, hey, I am well prepared for these questions you're asking me. Man. Other thing you can do, and this works really well, is while they're lecturing, be Googling everything they say. If you stop us in the middle of a lecture and raise your hand almost constantly to fact check us, like, that's really endearing.
There's no ego in being a college professor or an academia at all. It's a lot of very level-headed, very meager people that go into this this field that we're in.
It's actually part of the interview. This is a little known fact. When you're interviewing for a faculty position, one of the questions they ask you is like, how do you feel about just being completely humiliated all the time, 100% of the time? Like, oh, I love it. Great, you're hired.
You know, before we get to our final question, which I think is actually going to be a wonderful way to end the show, how can people follow you if they are looking for you on social media?
Yeah, look up, again, The Plant Prof on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok. And you can find Plantthropology pretty much everywhere, too. It's Anthropology with a PL on the front. And I'm on all the socials on there, too. And you can listen to it on any podcast listening device. That was the worst way I've ever said that. Ever.
Is there a term, by the way, for... is it podcatcher?
Podcatcher,
Is that the right term?
Because
I
call
see
them
that
podcatchers,
and I feel weird. Okay. Does anybody
like
else call them that?
No. Normal
people
are not normal.
I feel like I said that
and
people looked at me like,
No, podcasters are not normal. I don't even like the word podcast.
No.
Like, I hate it.
No.
We are not normal people. But they do call them podcatchers.
Okay.
Which, again,
I mean,
you're right.
It makes sense, because they're... But I don't think I've ever heard anybody else call them that.
No.
All right. Are you ready for our final question of the day?
Oh, I think I am. Yeah.
Every plant I've ever owned has died, and now my wife is pregnant. Am I ready?
So I have a follow-up question. Are those two things related? I know you ask for no context, but I really want some context. So no.
Yes.
I
can tell you, like, I literally do kill every plant, so I think I'm an okay father. So maybe it is.
Okay. Have you tried banana water?
I didn't write this question, by the way. This is, I want to be very clear. This is not...
I think the Chesco doth protest too much.
Banana water?
Banana water for bathing. Replace all mm-hmm. the normal water, any fluid intake, any food, bananas and banana water.
So fermented banana water, I'm sure, will get you a little buzz as well.
Yeah. You know, so, because, you know, the first 6 months are so tiring, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's mm-hmm. such a blur anyway. Just, like, get going on your homemade, like, banana liquor. And mm-hmm. just don't give that to the baby. Like,
although I also do think it's a bit too late to be asking this question. And this is probably terrible advice. Raising a baby's been easier for me than raising flesh. It's taken more time. There's more work that goes. Maybe if I put even a fraction of the work as I put it into plants, or that as I put it into my children, into plants, then all of mine wouldn't die.
You know, I will say, though, like, if I knew for sure that my plants would someday learn to talk and, like, mow the lawn for me, I might try a little harder.
That's a good point.
The value proposition.
Are you working on that? Is there, like, do you have some hidden projects you're going on?
Listen, I can't talk about it yet. It's very hush-hush, but if you listen to Planthropology, at some point in the future, maybe we'll get talking lawnmower plants. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. It's
for
just
zombies
like word
was
salad.
Actually just the future. Yeah. All right. Well, this has been Bad Advice Wednesdays, a show where we try not to ruin your life. And please do not listen to us. That was at least for not that last third of this show.
Yeah, probably not.
Thank you all for listening. And thank you, Vikram, for joining me today's show.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
And that was Bad Advice on a Wednesday. If you enjoyed today's show, please like, please subscribe, share it with your friends, drop a 5-star review. You can always support us financially at patreon.com/thespeechprof. All links of everything we talked about will be available in the show notes. And most importantly, remember, this is intended to be bad advice. Please do not listen to anything we said. I'm sorry.
Okay, dope rhyme slinger, good advice giver. Listen for a second, let me try and paint a picture.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.